coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Hello, everybody, and welcome. Welcome to this most hallowed of nights. All Souls Day, Dia de los Muertos, as it is called in Mexico. The veil is thin this evening. We will be talking about that with our good friend Anseline in the second part of the show after a commercial break. What real witchery is, Halloween, misconceptions of origins, what really is spellcasting? We'll be getting into that and many more topics like that with Anseline of the Caravan Library of Lore, as well as KPNL Radio, in the second part of our show tonight after commercial break. In the first part of the show, we will be talking with our good friend, the security consultant and investigator for 5x5 News, the amazing Mike Turber, is on hold as we speak, folks. Knowing the fact that we're live, we're here, we're going to be going, of course, through the news of the week. So let's hop on over to the Facebook. News of the Week is, of course, always brought to you by the Curious Realm Facebook group. That is where you can carry on conversation with other curious minds about topics of the day, emerging sciences, things like that. Out of interestingengineering.com, a new magnet-free electric motor needs no maintenance. Now, this article actually came out a few months ago, but for some reason just popped up on my feed, and I decided to share it. Oh, look, there's the live show. Out of TechCrunch, SpaceX successfully launches Falcon Heavy for the fourth time ever. Big news there. Uniquely Arkansas, the Falk Monster Market keeps the legend alive. If you're ever in Falk, Arkansas, make sure to stop on by the Monster Mart. They have a really great little museum of Falk Monster foot casts, all kinds of great things. That is coming to you out of Arkansas Living Magazine. Out of New Atlas, tiny solid-state LiDAR device can 3D map a full 180-degree field of view. Pretty amazing stuff there. Out of blog.physicsastronomy.com, NASA admits Alcubierre Drive initiative faster than the speed of light. That is exactly what we will be talking about with our good friend Mike Turber here in just a few minutes. Stop on by, folks. Check out the Curious Realm. If you hop on by Knowledge Vault, CuriousRealm/knowledge. The first page there is declassified programs and documents. And if you click on that, as you can see, the first item there is Lockheed Martin mini reactor. And if you click that, you will be taken to the actively released patent. This is fairly new out in the world. I mean, you can see it was approved, published in 2018. It was filed for in 2014. But this was just made public in a couple of articles, one of them that I posted from Sandbox the other day, talking about Lockheed Martin has a patent for fusion-powered fighters and bombers. We have long sought this technology in the United States. It is not the first time that we have talked about nuclear-powered aircraft. This is the first time that it has ever come out that there is a full-on patent. And that this reactor is small and compact enough to fit inside of the F-16 Fighting Falcon platform from the U.S. Air Force. Now, of course, our good friend Mike Turber is on hold right now. I'd like to play this video of him out at Plant 42.
Okay, so what we have here is Plant 42. In the background here, what you see, that building is the smaller building is building 611. That is the engineering building. That's where some of your administration offices are and what have you. Behind it, which you can't see, the big building there, I'll tell you that what that is in a minute. But behind it is Building 608. Building 608 is where they have the simulations. So all your simulators are in there for flying basically all the aircraft that they make. And of course the big building is Building 601. 601 is the main fabrication building. That's where they attach wings and do the main body and all that. And that building there is 855,000 square feet.
Great video there from our good friend Mike Turber from 5x5 News. Welcome back to the show. How have you been doing, my good friend?
Oh, wow. Watching that video. I've been doing well. Getting ready to transplant myself back to the West Coast again here soon. So I'm working on that and trying to get some things squared up here with the Tiger King stuff and some other things. I've got a couple local investigations that I started off here. I can wrap those up and get back to the West Coast. So that's what I'm working on right now.
You are always in the thick of stuff, man. And to know that you are still getting Tiger King revelations is absolutely amazing. We've got to do a whole episode on that and get all the updates because, man, it has become such an incredible... So, like, it was already an incredible story, but to see where it has come to now... and the things even that you've told me off air, stuff like that, are just jaw dropping.
Right. It's going to be one of those stories that, you know, in a few years you will be saying, I wonder what happened or I wonder what's going on with blah, blah, blah now, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And some of the stories are tragic. And some of the stories are amazing. Definitely, if you had watched the show, you would not have expected that some of the things that have occurred after the show basically was aired to have occurred. And it's just, it's kind of interesting, and especially from the perspective I have on it with my relationship with Carol and Howard and that kind of being embedded in that a little bit. It's kind of interesting to see it from that perspective because it was kind of a rare perspective to see it. But with the drones situations going on around the world, the Afghanistan deal, just so you know, the main group of people that I was trying to get out of Afghanistan are out. They're not all the way where they need to be yet, but we're working on that. So funding is always an issue, and trying to get Department of State approval for stuff is obviously an ongoing thing.
Yeah.
But a lot of irons in the fire and some really interesting stuff I'll tell you offline that just happened 2 days ago that might be definitely show topic worthy. Absolutely show topic worthy. I'll put it that way. Very soon. So I'll give you a hint on what that is privately.
There is rarely a conversation we have on or off air that I don't think is show topic worthy, man. It's just a world of stuff every time I talk to you. Just the fact that, and I remember when you posted this video, and the fact that. There ain't even any hiding this building. It's like on the side of a major thoroughfare, and it's just got a skunk on the side. You know, just
pretty
like
much.
loud and proud. This is where your secret money is spent, folks.
Yep. that's your Plant 42. That's your Air Force Plant 42, which is kind of mixed in with the Palmdale International Airport. It's kind of odd to go to a place that you know is probably one of the most highly secretive places on the planet with very few topping it. Like Area 51 would obviously be in consideration. But Plant 42 is home to, obviously Skunk Works, which is the producer of the SR-71, F-117 Nighthawk, and, you know, all these different aircraft and space technologies. And now we're looking at possible fusion technology. But keep in mind that video that was on the video you saw was just me around Plant 42. I wish I could show the inside part, which I did do in one of the buildings, but I had to not show that one. But anyway, so the other video I have on the channel there is the video that shows them working on the compact fusion reactor back in 2014 when they first applied for the patent. And when they discussed it, they said that they would have possibly a working prototype in 5 years. Well, that would have put it at about 2019. Well, they got approval for the patent in 2018, but no one really put a lot of emphasis on it because it wasn't clear, I guess, what it meant. Because if you read the patent, you have the patent there, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I've got the patent right here in front of us, folks. I mean, there it is.
The title of the patent is not something that someone would look at and go, well, wow, that could possibly power a plane or this or that.
Encapsulating magnetic fields for plasma confinement is the title of the patent application.
Exactly. So in true nerd speak, most people would just, you know, swap over that thinking, you know, who knows what that is, you know? But the implications of what those words mean when you put them together are mind boggling. It is not a game changer. It's a world changer. It's an everything changer. And that's what fusion will bring. And of course, we have heard this for 50 years or more that fusion is just around the corner. We're 10 years away. Just like the movie Money Pit with Tom Hanks and the guy saying, how long before your house is going to be ready? 2 weeks. And after about 6 months, it's laughable.
Yeah.
So now when people hear about fusion, it too is somewhat a jokable subject. Jokable? Is that a word?
Sure.
I just made it up.
Isn't that
a new word? Put it in the dictionary. So when you look at it from the aspect that, okay, people are tired of hearing about fusion being a possibility. Well, what it takes to make fusion is just like what it took to get us to the moon. It takes a lot of money and a lot of manpower to get that done. The difference that Lockheed has that has truly turned everyone's head is the fact that most types of reactors, fission or fusion or whatever, are lucky to get 1 to 5% efficiency out of the reactor. This reactor, its efficiency will be 1, which means 100% energy efficiency. That's just unbelievable, but that's what their patent says. Of course, we've seen some patents recently that we would also think were unbelievable, like the Salpeus patents that the Navy acquired. Which effectively would be a tic tac, you know, if you're looking at it that way. But, you know, back when I looked at Lockheed Martin as a possible suspect for building the tic tac, if it was truly a actual flying object that we controlled, I was looking for a power source and Jack Sarfati and myself, we were, you know, when I did the show with him, a couple of shows actually, we discussed the power source for the tic tac and he said he could power it with a 9-volt battery. And of course I was looking at it as, you know, that's not possible, but a viable power source would have to be a fusion reactor or something that's attainable.
Yeah, that's what's been said for the longest time, is that you would have to have the power of the sun to warp space and time, to make an object disappear, to produce these kind of, quote, quantum effects inside of a material.
Exactly. And a fusion reactor might not even be enough to even do that. But it's going to be the most, you know, the best thing we have going so far as being able to produce energy. And it's the number one, it's the holy grail of energy. It literally is the holy grail of energy. And that once we are able to produce fusion longer than 5 seconds, we will, and it be, you know, more energy out than what we put into it. That is your game changer there. It looks like Lockheed has either done it, is very close to doing it, because when you file for a patent for something, you have to have
a working model.
Some form, exactly, some form of working prototype or complete description or something that you can pass off to the attorneys at the patent office as something that is a viable, actual possibility that it could be made. Keep in mind, like Salpeus, one of his patents were kicked back, but the Navy actually called, I think the head of that group in the Navy called the patent office and said, not only is it possible, we have a functioning, prototype, which kind of blew my mind. But that's essentially where we're at with this patent, and which is weird because 2 years ago when I first put that video out, it didn't, you don't really get a lot of hits from it because people don't really know what the implications are. But I think this is probably going to shake it a little bit more. It's going to get a little bit more mainstream. We'll see exactly. Oh, another aircraft just took off from Afghanistan. That's what that was. So what we're looking at here is a object that is a machine that can fit inside the fuselage of an F-16 and power the turbofan engines of an F-16. That is amazing. And I think it's 50 megawatts of power is what they're looking at, but 100 megawatts of power can power a city of 100,000 people.
Yeah.
And that's crazy. So that's where we're at with this thing. And if, when you go back and you look at nuclear powered aircraft is not new. This is soon after World War II, we became enamored with a lot of practical applications on how we could use the nuclear energy that we basically just figured out for that war. When they dropped the bombs on, Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Yeah.
And so now they took that energy, creation device and shrunk it and put it in a plane. The EB, 36, I believe it was the, a B-36 bomber that was, or HB, was converted to actually run off of, nuclear power, but it had like a 1 megawatt, generation. It wasn't enough to run the aircraft, but it was enough to prove how, if it was viable or not.
Yeah.
So that plane flew. But with a lot of lead, 1 foot glass, that's how thick the glass was. The lead glass was in the cockpit was 1 foot thick. Can you imagine?
Wow.
And it's a lead encased, cockpit and all that. And it took a lot to even get that plane to fly with just the 1 megawatt generation, which is again, not enough to run the plane, but it was enough to prove if it was viable. So as soon as that plane lands, they had to park it over its bomb bay door, had to open up. They had to drop the nuclear, power plant into a underground facility, lock it up before anyone could move around that plane. It's not working. So that's fission, but fusion, which is essentially the opposite of fission. One is the splitting of the atom and the other is the fusion of two atoms together to create a heavier, element or isotope or what have you. And that produces energy in a different way, which is much more efficient, much more reliable, and much more safer, for everyone involved. So this is going to be an interesting thing to see how it pans out.
Well, and
what are your thoughts?
I mean, over the last year, we have seen article after article. I mean, we post it, we talk about it regularly about fusion reactors in China, other fusion mm-hmm. reactors that have actually hit the point of, temperatures of the sun. To know that is what's in the news.
Mm-hmm.
Yet still, here we are looking at a patent from 2018,
right?
Talking about something that is approximately the size of the engine on your car,
right?
Because once again, this is just a fuel cell. All this does is take the place of charged batteries and fuel. According to this, there's still an engine on the airplane, everything else. Now, it could be used to power all kinds of exotic technologies? Most definitely. But even
the way it works essentially is the what produces thrust on a jet aircraft, a jet powered aircraft. The air comes in to the turbofan from the inside. The air is compressed and heated and then pushed out the back. Fuel's injected into that superheated air and then ignited. And then that's what comes out the back. And that's how you get your thrust. So what this is going to do is basically replace that compressor part, by actually just producing the extremely hot gas or hot air, without necessarily going through the compressing process. And it can do it unlimited. Of course, you would need the engines to start up normally anyway. So you might need the other components to begin with before this ramps up to speed, but that is effectively what it does. It's like a heat exchanger. It effectively becomes that. It's a heat exchanger where it takes in the cool air, the radioactive material, heat that air, and then through whatever process they have apparently mastered at Lockheed Martin, pushes that superheated air back into the combustion chamber, if you want to call it that, and then the fuel is sprayed or atomized into the jet flow of air and then ignited. And then what comes out the back is going to produce your thrust. So this power plant would be central, like on the central fuselage, but would send, that superheated air to both power plants. Like a F-16 is a single power plant, but, yeah, but there's, you know, if they modified it to fit whatever aircraft they want,
F-18 for standard Navy, what have you.
Yep. Two engines there. And, you know, and keep in mind, this was done back in the 50s, back in 58, I think it was. They produced a viable working jet engine. I think it was the 87, the JL-87 by, GE. If memory, I'm going by memory here. And that engine was, you know, was working with the with that process. But again, that was fusion. And the problem with that was the exchange happened over the raw, like, material. So what was coming out of the aircraft was radioactive air. Not a good thing. This system is more of a, like a closed loop kind of system, I guess, to a degree. Whereas the heat exchanger is being heated and then that in turn heats the air. Which sounds like a simple thing to do, which, you know, just from the process of, well, don't heat the actual air with the actual material, you know, have it heat something that heats something else, much like we do at nuclear power plants where we have the water that's heated and that turns to steam. Steam turns to turbines. Turbines make the electricity. But when we're looking at this technology as a true game changer, as they said in the other video. If you want to play that other video, you can.
I am looking it up as we speak, my friend. Trying to find it.
A little bit old on my channel. It'll say Lockheed powered Tic Tac or something like that. But the patent is, keep in mind, back when we looked at several other patents, like the Navy patent, the famous patents from Salpeus, there was a lot of questions, a lot more questions than answers that came out. Now, I did see his, interview that he did with Kurt, Jamungle, I think that's his name, at TOE, which is, can't remember how to say it for. Theories of Everything. That's what it is. There's an actual good, really good interview with Salpeus. I've never seen him in an interview. In this interview, it was extracurricular.
There you go, bud.
You got it? There, let's see it.
Here is the actual product video that I've been searching for.
Yep, that's it.
50 years ago, when people were super excited about nuclear power, we tried to put it on everything, including airplanes. There were some big operational issues that wasn't safe. Fusion is a much safer option. A next generation of airplanes that doesn't rely on fuel and can just stay aloft. Unlimited range, unlimited endurance. That's what nuclear fusion can do for an airplane.
And for those of you listening, this reactor that he's working on presently in the lab is probably about the size of a college mini fridge. The one behind him is maybe about the size, oversized SUV size.
They can overcome their mutual repulsion and collide. Fuse into one piece. When they do that, they release a lot of energy, a million times more powerful than a chemical reaction, for example. What we're trying to do is control that reaction here on Earth. We put it in a magnetic bottle that can contain the high temperatures. You need hundreds of millions of degrees. We can release in a controlled fashion that energy. We think we have a very robust strategy going forward that has potential for success. What this concept does is it's a high beta concept, which means we use a high fraction of the magnetic field pressure. We use all of its potential. And that means we can make our devices 10 times smaller. So instead of something the size of a building, we have something the size of a large truck. The small is the reason we can do this quickly. If something's small, you can build up momentum, you can develop it fast. It doesn't take 5 years to design it, it takes 3 months. We can design it, build it, test it in under a year. We can do several of these cycles, and we think we can get to a prototype in 5 years. Every time you do plasma physics, you learn something new. And that's why this is a high-risk, high-payoff endeavor. That's what we're doing here, is testing that concept out to see if it really holds the promise that it appears to. And as a defense company, our increasing mission is to enhance global security, and this is how we do that in the energy realm. The world already does 40 gigawatts of gas turbines a year. The gas line going into that gas turbine, we're going to replace that with a heat exchanger coming off our fusion reactor. We basically use the gas turbine infrastructure completely. We partner with one of those companies, and we ship fusion-powered turbine plants around the world, and we expand that technology. Gas turbines are a huge improvement over other technologies in terms of climate change, but they're only a 50% improvement. We take it all the way. So no emissions, safe operation, proliferation free. That means we can ship it to the whole world with a good conscience. Now, the old promise of atoms for peace was a noble one, but ultimately flawed because the technology wasn't right for it. We can achieve that grand vision and bring clean power to the world. The true atomic age can start. 10 years, we have great military vehicles. 20 years, we have clean power for the world. This isn't online by 2100. This is online by the time I can't even retire after we finish this. No, I still have to find another job after this is done.
And that is the scale of rapidity with which this technology moves. That video, once again, folks, was 2015?
2014, 2015, in that range. Yeah, exactly. And the patent was applied for, I think the original one was late 2013 or 2014, in that range. And then it was approved in 2018. Kind of quietly, you know, no big deal, you know, no one really. I mean, it caught my eye.
And how often do you see Skunk Works? Like I've got it paused on the logo. Here's our product video. You know, here's our sizzle reel of the technology.
Exactly.
Not something that you would see them pull every day. And that is technology that is pretty up there, pretty out there. And for them to say back in 2015, like he said, I'm going to have to find a new job when this is done.
Now, there's several key aspects to the patent that are probably, I honestly have not seen the patent since the approval. I've seen it before then. I'm assuming it's pretty much the same. But there are certain processes that the containment of that energy, keep in mind this is going to produce a temperature hotter, not as hot as the surface of the sun, which is only in, say, 10 to 5,000 degrees, but millions of degrees inside that small chamber, which is probably no bigger than about a football, or maybe a little bit larger than a, probably like a, anywhere from a football to say a 55 gallon drum, and that range is what you're looking at on the screen right now. And that's those two, circles there are essentially high powered magnets that can control the plasma, and those two things pointing into it can't really say what they are, but we'll just say that it's a very radical version of a laser.
Sure.
Using lasers as part of the confinement along with magnetics, is pretty much, is where the technology is. Now some of this technology, there's a company called EMC2, which is EMC squared, at which the Navy had put a lot of money into, just before Lockheed pretty much, kind of took over, that process.
Yeah.
But, and you know, the race for the, you know, for who could come up with a viable fusion solution. If this patent comes through as promised, keep in mind the military is going to have it first because obvious reasons it's partly a security issue.
Even like the scientists said, for 20 years, we'll have some great military vehicles. After that, great power for everybody.
That's right. And of course, the average person is going to go, hey, that's not right. You should simultaneously do that. Well, sure. Well, unfortunately, just like with NASA and with all these large black projects and all these high budget, you know, even public projects, it has to go to that first to get the technology developed. And then after that, then it's disseminated amongst the other industries and what have you.
So. Absolutely. Because as we've said numerous times, what I believe we are seeing amongst all the UFO, UAP, everything else is a full on dissemination of our own technology.
Yeah.
Because without admitting it exists, we cannot monetize it to the next realm.
Right. And you can't be surprised that Lockheed is the leader of this because the.
Absolutely not.
They started producing or started working on aircraft that could fly being powered by nuclear power. I believe as early as 1958 or so is when they produced the Air Force has plants around the country, and they're just numbered. Plant 42, obviously, is where Skunk Works is. Plant 44 is a secret facility that's in Tucson, Arizona, that ran primarily by Raytheon. Good luck finding that on any map anywhere. But yeah, that's a plant 44. And Plant 67 was a plant that began in Dawsonville, Georgia. It's about 10,000 acres. And that was a facility where they were testing a lot of things as to what would this nuclear energy do. They actually irradiated the forest around it, where no animals, nothing was living there for like a square mile around this place. And now it's a park. Now it's a forestry reserve or whatever it is, but that's just outside Atlanta, which is where Plant 67 was. So they've been doing that since then. So they have a lot of background knowledge on producing this stuff. And here we have, we're finally looking at something that might already be flying, possibly.
Well, and that's just it. Already be flying. And when you're talking about the heat signatures that we've seen, things like that, the speeds that we've seen, you know, even if you're looking at the speeds that can be attained by scramjet, things like that, which are known technologies, experimented with technologies, that's not even including this kind of power plant behind that technology. You would be talking easy hypersonic speeds.
And power is everything. I mean, if you look at a nuclear powered aircraft carrier, the amount of room of the equipment that's necessary to run that ship and a submarine is enormous. It's maybe about a third of a submarine ship is devoted to that nuclear power plant. Imagine going in and being able to put this object, which I guess I can't say I've seen one or what have you, but we'll just say that the concept of it was discussed about on a conference table. We'll say that. So imagine an object, just like you said earlier, about the size of a car engine that is producing 100 megawatts of power. Yeah. You know, with unlimited fuel supply, a plane that can loiter for days, weeks, months, or forever, just flying around doing what it does, ISR, you know, so you have intelligence, you know, reconnaissance, surveillance. And those are going to be probably the first primary uses for it. I don't really see a fighter being the first obvious use, because the loitering capability is what I would think that the reconnaissance versions would make more sense. But they did say size of an F-16 could carry that power plant, which might be a clue as to what the test bed might be.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I've been A-B-ing the whole time the picture, the still frame picture from the video of them actively handling the ring that's inside of the
coil ring. There you go. You can throw a football through
the internal
ring,
really. Coil. And yeah, I mean, you can see the size of this containment rig. It's it's easily the size of an aircraft engine.
Yep, easily. And that would fit easily in a fuselage. I mean, I can't wait till Chris Lado, who's a former F-16 pilot, now turned paranormal / UFO investigator, so he hears this and see what his take is on it. So that'll be pretty interesting.
Well, and, you know, once again, folks, nobody's saying that this is I have held the whole time. I don't think that any of the videos that we are seeing are that have been declassified now are alien technology or alien in origin. I have held the entire time that it is our technology, that we are A-B-ing it, red team, blue teaming it against our own known quantitatives like passive radar, things like that. It makes a whole lot more sense. It makes a whole lot more sense as to why Air Force officials, the people in charge of the F-16 platform, would be hopping aboard a naval carrier.
Oh, yeah. Man, that's an area of contention.
It's
one of the things. Oh, it's a big deal to have, you know, not an opposing force, but to have another entity, another armed service come into your armed service and remove, you know, all of the data and what have you. But they were accompanied by a couple of plainclothes people, that were from a specific company, which company I'm not 100%, but it's either Lockheed Martin or Raytheon. I believe it's one of those two, that came with them, because they had their hands in quite a bit of all of the equipment that was utilized to fly, to record, and to basically manage that whole theater, or not necessarily theater, but the training area. There's a lot of things where this stretches out into where you have to wonder, okay, when did their first prototype start working? They said they would have one within 5 years. Well, that would be 2019, which puts it past all the videos that we've seen. Like the 2004 Nimitz, 2015 on the Roosevelt.
Yep.
But some of the more recent videos, you know, who knows? I don't think this technology is in any of that. I believe a lot of that's prosaic. And also, even though this would be prosaic, but probably not this. But the power plant, I think giving the ability to loiter is going to be one of the primary things, and to have a small power plant going to a vessel that otherwise could use that area to hold more weapons, which is going to be something that the Senate Appropriations Committee and, you know, Intelligence Floor Committee, all these different committees that look at what is going to be funded, they're going to say, wow, we can put more missiles on a submarine just by shrinking the size of the engine. Yeah, there's your HB-36, right?
Yeah.
It's an amazing thing. And keep in mind, this is 2,000% more efficient than anything that has been proposed or has been shown before, meaning going from 1 to 5% to 100% efficiency. That's a huge statement for Lockheed to make, and they would not make that statement if they didn't feel they could back it up. Lockheed is not some upstart company that's coming out trying to make a name for themselves, and they say some outlandish crap just to get their name out there so investors could pump some money into them. So, you know, they don't need that. They're a multi-billion dollar company. It's probably, definitely in the top three for the military. And it's amazing the things that they already made and have made. There's Project Pluto. That's for SLAM missile right there.
Yep.
So nuclear powered ramjet engines basically superheat the air as it comes in. You can make a ramjet with a mason jar and a screwdriver and a bottle of heat, which is that stuff you put in your fuel to get the water out of the lines and stuff. And that's essentially what you would be making. That's what these engines are, as simplistic as they are. You just superheat the air. The air then radically expands when you add a fuel mixture into it and ignite it, and comes out the back of thrust. It's an amazingly simple idea with very few moving parts. In fact, with some of the pulse grenades, there's like no moving part.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, have you made one of those yet? You have to show you the video.
I've made a very tiny one. I've made a very tiny one before, about the size of like a 20-ounce bottle.
There you go.
That was about enough for me to be like, okay, I shouldn't be playing with this. This is going to be way too much fun, and I will go down a rabbit hole that I probably shouldn't go down living in an apartment.
Yes, a very loud rabbit hole. Those things are loud, and they are loud.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that tiny little bottle sounded like a moped going down the road. It was pretty impressive.
While watching all your articles that you basically grab and put into the stream on Facebook, onto the group there, there is so much. I mean, 5 years ago, the amount of new technology that just keeps hitting is just, it seems like it's ramped up so exponential. It's very difficult to keep up with by any means. But it's so interesting when a story like this comes out that, you know, I got to visit the facility. I got to see certain things and what have you. And then now it comes out and I'm like, wow, I reported on this 2 years ago. No big deal, but here it is. And, you know, hopefully we'll have something in the skies. Maybe we already have something in the skies. Maybe, I don't know, maybe the son of Blackbird might use this power or that aircraft. That's the FX right there. That's a very sleek, beautiful aircraft.
Yeah, and this was 2020. They were talking about the fact that they were just flying their new prototypes and things like that. But when you are talking about especially things like the X-37B,
right?
The unmanned platform, the reach into space with the Space Force. And don't get me wrong, folks, that is no new initiative. The Space Force initiative has been around since I was a kid. I mean,
basically expansion of Space Command.
Space Command in Cheyenne Mountain was the beginnings of all that. So, and the fact that we were tracking every piece of space junk, much less every satellite. Not many people know that we actively, since before the creation of U.S. Space Force, actively had like Sentinel satellites that went around and verified the fact that, hey, this satellite's doing what it's supposed to be doing. And if not, well, we had things that could definitely down a satellite.
Absolutely. Some of them are just as simple as throwing BBs at it.
Yeah, exactly.
Then you produce more problems. So if the Catch-22, if you try to destroy a satellite, you might end up destroying one of your own, which actually has happened when, one of China's satellites hit a Russian satellite and then that hit something else.
Yeah. It was a whole chain reaction. But even they've admitted that, you know, the Chinese, by they, have admitted the fact that they have, satellites capable of destroying satellites, things like that. So when you're talking about
their whole space station, which I believe the final piece is either gone up or going up. Space Force's launch 44, we'll just call it that, just went off yesterday with it, and that was a neat launch, because the Falcon Heavy is a beautiful rocket to watch go off. It's loud and what have you.
But
the fog from Vandenberg came to Florida and surrounded it. You couldn't see hardly anything. When they came back, it was neat. Poor Todd at Everyday Astronaut. Man, if you want to watch something that's heartbreaking, watch this podcast of the launch. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So, there you go. It's kind of launched the third and final space station component.
Yeah, and that was yesterday.
Yep.
So,
and even though some of their technology is behind, but you have to keep in mind that a lot of the number one companies that we think about, if I immediately ask you what's the best phone company as far as mobile phones, most people will probably say Apple. Some will say Samsung, but most will probably say Apple. Made in China.
Yeah.
What's the best drones that are you know, commercially available in the world? Made in Shenzhen, China. Made at Steve at DJI. That's who makes them.
Yeah.
So you have all these different companies, and so China is, I look at China as being, and I'm doing a UAP report, this evening and some into tomorrow, that will discuss, Russia versus, various other countries. And China is definitely, the contender. Whereas Russia has some very old technology, they lack the ability to get some of the updated chips and things like that. So that's where we're looking at right now, because there's a lot of blame going around of different things that are happening.
Oh, absolutely. And all kinds of stuff. I've got the article up right now from Reuters about the X-37B landing after a 2-year classified mission. And when you wonder what these technologies, aside from exotic technologies like invisibility cloaks, hypersonic travel, warping of space and time, things like that, all things that our government has actively put money into researching. There's a reason why they raid people like Hal Puthoff and stuff like that onto everything. Everything. Yeah. And it didn't even dawn on me, Mike, until I went and met the man at IRVA. At the Remote Viewing Association. And it was like, wow, wait a minute. Every one of the guys that started this actual science of remote viewing is like a PhD holding particle physicist.
Yep. And you met several people there that I'm glad you got to meet them.
There were big boys. There were big boys there. There were big names that are on a lot of these research teams, that are on a lot of the things like To the Stars Academy and stuff like that. And the whole reason why they're just read onto a topic is because of things like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because once an emerging technology comes out, now you can't talk about it.
Right.
You know?
And not only that, the other aspect of it is, you know, where a lot of people say we don't really test things on ourselves. Well, from an exploitable, that's one of the first things you do. It's like, the first thing we do is we try to exploit it ourselves. We try to see if we can hack it ourselves or what have you, depending on what the technology is. And, you know, remote viewing might be one of those.
To literally think, Mike. I think this is the short-sightedness of a lot of people whenever you're talking classified material, classified technologies, classified programs, to think that, let's just take it back to HAVBLUE. First thing I ever learned about after SR-71, things like that, I was a huge SR-71 freak. Of course, a crazy Aurora fan as a kid, because that was the scuttlebutt when I was in, like, you know, like 8-9 years old, was Aurora back then.
Yeah.
Using pulse jet engines, things like that. But Just to take it back to a program like Have Blue, where Boeing and Lockheed were both competing for the government contract mm-hmm. of stealth technology.
Right.
You know, reduction of heat signature, sound signature, radar signature, everything.
Mm-hmm. Everything.
My question to you, Mike, is do you think these dudes developed that technology and not a way to detect it?
Well, I mean, that's a good question.
What do you do when your badass spaceship goes rogue?
Yeah.
How are you going to find it? You got to have a way to find it. So guaranteed, whenever they come up with this technology of stealth, everything else, like, they've got a way to detect it.
Yep, absolutely.
They may not let the enemy know they have that, but they aren't going to put it out on the battlefield without a way to detect it and find it.
Yep. You can't make something that moves it totally invisible. You can make it invisible to the eye or to a certain spectrum or a certain, you know, radio spectrum.
You can bend light around it, but you'll see the objects behind it moving.
Exactly. And you'll also see its interference with something. And in my case, one of the things I was read onto and worked with was MAD, which is magnetic anomaly detection. And any object that moves through any media, whether it be water or whether it be through the air, is going to produce some sort of electromagnetic signature, which you can actually determine what that aircraft is and track it. And then in the future, if you see that same signature again, you know what it is.
Yeah,
but that also
passively so.
Yep. And true. Passively so.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of technology that's coming out, which is super interesting. I mean, it's great to see it on paper here. I don't know how much of a delay we have with the podcast here. But you know, the patent application is approved as of obviously 2018. And the types of aircraft that can be envisioned that this would work with, keep in mind, they were looking at a aircraft carrier in the air, like literally.
Yeah.
Aircraft carrier. And with 1,000-foot wingspan, you know, 800-member crew, things like this. That was back in the day. Of course, that was canned. But these things start becoming viable again, you know, where you now have the power to do what you need to do. I think the thing needed like 127 engines or some ridiculous amount of engines. You know, now it might need just this thing.
Yeah.
Or a couple of them, you know, something like that. It's, you know, so, you know, a flying cruise ship, you know.
Yeah.
If you have a flying aircraft carrier, that immediately comes to mind as a flying cruise ship. That would be so cool.
Yeah. Well, and even right now, I'm showing on screen one of the last things that we've talked about, the patent for the laser-induced plasma for infrared homing mm-hmm. missile countermeasures. Even the technology for that, even the technology for a plane-based laser platform,
mm-hmm.
you would have.
You and I were talking about that years ago.
Sure, you could use a lithium battery the size of a Tesla battery or something like that. You'd get like 3 shots out of it.
Yeah.
If it's powerful enough to burn through, because otherwise you're going to, if it doesn't have the megawatt power or milliwatt power rather, or megawatt, to literally go through the titanium shell of an aircraft or of a missile mm-hmm. immediately, it's got to stay on it and stay on it and stay on it. And keep heating the same spot in order to get its general effect that it's trying to get. However, if you have a massive burst of power behind it,
mm-hmm.
something on the order of, a very, very tiny nuclear reactor on your airplane, you could absolutely power a laser-based weapon platform that is stunningly powerful in short bursts.
Right. The first objects that you'll see being created will be objects that will utilize the heat aspect, the heat energy generation aspect of it. The next behind that would be obviously what you're alluding to, which is the ability to produce a massive amount of power, which would stretch into your electronic countermeasures, the electronic warfare arena. That whole thing opens up so many doors of opportunity. that previously, when you would look at it, say, wow, we could do that, but the power source would be larger than the plane that we carry it.
Yeah.
Things like that. Well, so like a gallon marshmallow.
And very interesting to see the publication dates of these. February 15th, 2018 for the magnetic field plasma confinement, and February 6th, 2020 for the infrared laser homing countermeasures.
There you go.
So yeah. And even whenever you start going through down bottom and reading the inside the mini reactor, some of the associated technologies that could come of it, or that it could be connected to, it's pretty remarkable.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's just like come out with the next holy grail of batteries. Like we've been promised the graphene batteries, which are just now starting to trickle out. You know, as making the efficiency of whatever it is you're making so much better. Yeah. Lockheed just hit the ball right out of the park. I mean, you can't get better than 100% efficiency. I mean, it's just, maybe you can. Maybe there's theoretically you can do 110% or whatever. But, you know, it's over, so to speak. If that's it, they've nailed it. You know, that's going to be a huge moneymaker for them. But, hopefully it'll get into the consumer slash, you know, civilian side. Yeah, quickly enough to actually produce a change that would make an effect for everything, like including global warming in our lifetimes. I think that would be cool to see before I go, you know, before I check out. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it says right here, this is compact enough to be mounted in or on a vehicle such as a truck, aircraft, ship, train, spacecraft, or submarine. Some embodiments may provide a fusion reactor that may be utilized in desalination plants or electrical power plants. Other technical advantages will be readily apparent to one skilled in the art from the following figures. Wow. To one skilled in the art. And I guess that would be one skilled in the art of all these things listed on the side that are associated technologies like resonant heating of plasma on antennas, plasma heating with radio frequency waves.
There you go.
And yeah, just thinking of the exotic technology that it took, once again, radio heating with or plasma heating with radio frequency waves, things like that.
Active cooling of structures immersed in plasma.
Yep. Yep. And then there is, where was it? I saw one about beams. Directed energy conversion of fusion plasma energy via cycles. Oh, man.
They're actually trying to say.
Yeah. Well, and it's one of those like, oh, hey, yeah, we use this technology. We use that technology. There it is. Plasma heating with neutral beams.
Yeah, right, keep in mind the first two letters of phaser.
Yep.
Plasma heating.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
So we might have a phaser coming.
And when you go back and start looking at the design, it shows you that plasma heating and everything else. So.
Yeah, we'd get in trouble.
And there's the two beams right there, the heat injectors, like what we were talking about. That's why I brought that back up there, was the beams. Technology. Yep. So, just interesting to see all of the things that pop up, all the things that come from this.
Are they called those heat injectors?
Heat injectors. So, I guess technically you're injecting heat via a beam, via a very specific tuned oscillation of a beam. Like
that
absolutely,
wasn't called that when I thought.
Absolutely, wow. Like makes perfect sense. You know, they're injecting heat. They're lasers, whatever you want to call them.
Maser, laser, phaser, daser.
Yeah. So
we're gonna run out of azers.
It's always interesting talking with you, Mike, because the way that all of this technology talks together, works together, is really based on each other. I think it's short-sighted of a lot of investigators and a lot of people out there to not explore these things, to not, I guess, have them on their radar. You know, even the idea of that laser chaff system that we've talked about so many times, that interestingly enough, every time you see a video declassified, it seems as though it's a forward-looking infrared pod. Being able to see the connection of all these things, I think, is something very, very important that a lot of people are kind of missing out on. So I want to thank you for always taking the time to come on, really lay this stuff out and splay it out so that people can see the intricate workings of the inside, because without seeing that, it can be very easy to be blinded by media. It can be very easy to be blinded by frenzy and even our own want. You know, like I know you, like me, are a believer of believers, man. But you're also going to discount 98%.
You know? Oh, absolutely. I mean, you got to take away so much flack.
You've gotten more than your fair share of flack about the Batman balloon. All kinds of things. It's out there, man. I want to thank you for your time.
Yeah, sometimes you have to be patient and just wait until finally just like I've done on a couple of things. I just wait and then come around. I just the other day, someone sent me a note saying, "Hey, I know I gave you a lot of hell about, you know, blah 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 subject about 2 years ago. I'm starting to think that might be exactly what's going on, because this just came out and I hadn't even seen it yet. And I'll tell you what it is later."
Yeah.
Those kind of things make you feel good. It means that I'm putting out information, I think, at a time. I don't do a lot. I haven't done a video in a while because all this Afghanistan stuff and other stuff going on in my life. I've been pretty dormant. But that's kind of thing too. But a reporter, investigator that, like yourself, myself, and several others that I can probably name that are interested enough in the subject to bring it, you know, out in such a way where people can either understand it or hear about it for the first time. A lot of times, for some people, hear about some of the stuff is through this type of reporting. Yeah. The mass media sometimes doesn't really grab onto it. We'll see. I know you got another guest coming on here soon.
I do. I mean, they're pre-recorded. My conversations with guests like you, and I never ever want to stress the time on those, you know. We cover a lot of breadth, man, whenever we get together and we talk, and it's always fantastic.
Bouncing around to the point people want me to stay on the subject. It's so hard to, when you want to really just tell a lot of people a lot of different things at once, and you flood them with so much information, they just shut down, and you're like, man, I need to really streamline how I do this. It's exciting kind of be alive.
There is so much out there. I sometimes, like not too long ago, just this last week on ShowSite, one of the guys that I was working with was sitting at another lunch table, and I was sitting there, and a buddy of mine was with me, and he was like, "Your ears just perked up, didn't they?" And I was like, "Yeah." I'm just sitting there, fly on the wall, listening. And then somebody goes, "You know, Chris Jordan has a show that talks about stuff like this. What do you think, Chris Jordan?" It was, I saw myself from the outside, just laying out points of fact and things with UAPs and the way that the disclosures happened and the holes that I've poked in what's there, and the fact that it may very well be our own technology. And it was one of those, like, man, that is wow.
Everything starts clicking together. It's like when a story breaks, but at first it's so many ideas on the table that it's confusing. It's like looking at a puzzle with all the pieces disjointed, and then over time these pieces start coming together, and you know, and it starts getting clear and you're like, wow, you know, and, you know, sometimes you may be following a news source that may not necessarily be giving you the full thing, you know, the actual story or maybe putting their spin on. I mean, I've been accused of that and I have probably done that, but not on purpose in some cases.
Yeah.
But that's how it goes. You follow a path that you think is right and then you find out that's not correct. And then it takes a very good person like yourself.
Thank you.
A thing you do it where you've gone back and you say, hey, I thought this at one time.
Yeah.
And now new information has come out and it's not that anymore. It's this. And some people view that as floundering or whatever. But that's how science works. I mean,
absolutely.
That is the process.
Yeah. And you've got to be willing to go back and reexamine yourself. You've got to be willing to go back and reexamine your beliefs and why you believe them. And are you going down this rabbit hole because of your beliefs, not because of that's where the evidence takes you? You know,
I'm going down the rabbit hole to get that Westley rabbit.
That's right.
I want some awesome pepper.
Where's my awesome pepper? man, you are always creepily inside my head. I want to thank you again for your time, bud. Always great conversation tonight. Let everybody know where they can go to follow 5x5 News, where they can get the latest videos whenever you put them out, things like that, my friend.
The easiest spot is just on YouTube and on Twitter. Some of the more current talking part is on Twitter, but most of the videos and the stuff that we refer to sometimes is on my channel, which is 5x5 News on YouTube. And as you see it right there, appreciate that.
Always.
But yeah, that's where it's all going to be.
All right. Well, Bud, thank you so much, as always, for coming on, breaking this stuff down, getting down to the nitty gritty of these technologies, these news breaks that happen with technology. Always great to talk with you. Godspeed in your mission with getting everybody out of Afghanistan. We'll have to have you on to talk Tiger King updates, things like that as well.
Sounds good.
All right. Take care, man. Talk to you soon.
Buddy.
All right. While you are online checking out everything from Mike Turber and 5x5 News, folks, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. Curious Realm is where you can, of course, find all of the episodes. That's where you can go and give us your story at the Experiencer page right there. Share your story. That's also where you can find the Knowledge Vault. That's where we were pulling those the electronic countermeasures and Lockheed Martin mini reactor. That's where you can find so many declassified government programs, documents, things like that. So stop on by, check it out. That is curiousrealm.com/knowledge. Stay tuned after this commercial break. So happy to be welcoming back the amazing Anne Celine. She is the host of the Caravan Library of Lore podcast. She is the owner and founder of KPNL Radio. And also a practicing Wiccan. So we will be talking about Wicca, witchcraft, the history of witchcraft, the real story behind Halloween, what it comes from, what it is, as well as misconceptions on witchcraft. Right after this, folks. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spagyric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at curiousrealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is curiousrealm.com/store. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies, Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today. And let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training. And use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website, again, is podcastcadet.com. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back from break. Thank you so much to our sponsors, as always, especially the amazing Dr. Kimberly McGeorge with The Secret of Everything. Make sure to stop on by, check her out. She is your source for online consciousness expansion exercises, readings, property clearings, things like that. Thank you so much, Dr. Kimberly, for your support. We do need to have you back on very soon. In this segment, I'm very happy to welcome back the amazing Lady Anne Celine. She is the author of Aperture in the Veil. We will be talking about Halloween, the topic of Halloween, where Halloween really comes from, what some of the understandings and misunderstandings in society are, especially when it comes to witchcraft, the occult, and their tie into this holiday. Welcome back to the show. Anne Celine, how are you doing?
I'm wonderful. It's an honor to be back. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation at the Texas Bigfoot Conference about a month ago. It was great hanging out with you all weekend. Your energy is absolutely awesome. And when it came to this topic, I was like, you know, I would love to talk to somebody who is actively involved in the world of magic CK, the practice of magic. And you yourself are a magic practitioner. Tell us a little bit about how you came into the world of practicing magic and the lifestyle that you live with it.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we're going to go way back. I was a child. I was probably, I want to say, around 10 or 11. And I remember traveling down to California with my father. And I think we were in Old Town Sacramento. And there were these really cool buildings. You know, they were old Western type buildings. And they had those wooden sidewalks that you'd step up on, and it just felt like you were completely transported into the past. And so I was peeking in these different little shops, and there was one that had all kinds of different, they had candles, they had books, they had incense. I mean, it was, of course, it just drew me in. Now, up to this point, my life had already been one of high strangeness, because I had had experiences from my very earliest memories in regards to shadow entities and hauntings and ghosts and what I would later learn to be like psychic abilities. And so the very first book that I picked up, it just kind of called to me. There's this beautiful tree on the front cover, and it said Wicca, you know, across it. And being somebody that I love nature, I love being out in the forest. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to get this one. I don't know why. And it was really big. It's a thick book. And it had everything in it, from meditations to different spells to, you know, I mean, you name it. And so that was my first like book on magic. And I remember practicing some of these things as described within the pages. The first ones that I did, of course, were a meditation. And I always had results. I always felt like when it was talking about reaching your spirit guides or your spirit animals, you know, and so I thought, okay, well, all of this works. So I'm going to try this candle magic stuff. And I remember, and I feel so bad about it, but yet I laugh. Okay, so one time, you know, this was, you have the cord knotting, and it's kind of, you know, more on the cursing side of things. And I was a snot-nosed kid in the library having an issue with the librarian, and she had actually, there was some books in there that were more paranormal, and I was super excited about them, and they confiscated them from me, which was interesting because it was like, well, they were on your shelves. Well, anywho, so I take this cord and I knot it. It was supposed to be knotted 3 times. And I stuck it up on top of the windowsill. And so we go about the day, and I just wanted the books back, really. But I hear later that the librarian's tires had been slashed by another student.
Oh.
And the reason why, though, was because her vehicle and this other high schooler's vehicle were identical. So the kid was actually trying to get back at another kid, but he ended up actually doing it to the librarian instead. Wow. And who knows if that had anything to do with what I did.
At that moment, it certainly did.
Right. Exactly. So it was kind of like, whoa, all right, maybe I need to be a little more careful here. And, you know, so I didn't necessarily do anything like that ever again. Now, you know, especially like as I grew older, then I ended up in healing group. And in healing group, I was learning Reiki. I was learning how the energies worked. I was learning how to channel. And that it was there that I also started learning how to do like the intuitive tarot readings, and I learned more about candle magic. And magic is just kind of an everyday thing for me. You know, like, for instance, because it's all about intention. And
absolutely.
Right. So if you're in the kitchen, let's say, there is no fighting in my kitchen. None. There is no negative energy that I will allow in my kitchen. Because if you're sitting there cooking your food, and let's say you're pissed off and you're just, you know, stirring your whatever, and you're just putting that negative energy into it, you're going to consume that energy. And you're putting it into you in multiple ways. So I tend to, I'll play music, I'll be dancing around, I'm happy, I'm, you know, and I'm really trying to make that whatever it is that I'm making, you have that extra ingredient of positive energy and love. Yeah. And I really do believe that it makes a difference.
It absolutely makes a difference. It makes a huge, massive difference. And I, for the longest time, and I've helped people, musician friends of mine, podcasters, things like that, build a space for their art. Mm. And the one concept that I bring to them all the time is the ancient concept of the hearth. And the fact that there was at one point a goddess of the hearth, and you welcomed the muse and the goddess of the hearth into your home, and you built a space for them. What they liked, right. What moved you to welcome them. And it really was a point of intention in your home. You know, like you can see right over here, over my shoulder, my little space. It's a constant fight for horizontal space because I don't want to clutter that space. That space is for something very specific. And to clutter that with other things is to literally disrespect that.
Exactly.
And to say, no, it's for the, like, it's a dump zone is what that is. Like that's what I've now created for my muse is this place where I just dump a bunch of stuff, you know. And for you to say the same thing about your cooking, about the fact that while you are putting that kind of energy into what literally nourishes your home and your family and into the space that nourishes your home and your family, that you will not allow the negativity in there. So that's a beautiful thing that is very conscious.
Thank you.
Well, and you mentioned a second ago that you don't necessarily practice magic, you live magic. And it's an interesting concept because once you kind of get used to the idea of manifestation and daily manifestation, that is really the key there, because a lot of people think for some reason, and not even for some reason, this is what they have been taught. And this is where I guess the lesson of this episode really begins, is the huge misunderstanding of magic and witchcraft to begin with, not only historically, but religiously, and the true persecution of what took place after the publishing of the Malleus Maleficarum, back in the, I guess that was the 1500s. And that was the Hammer of the Witches. That was what really moved us into the realm of witch hunts, things like that. And the idea of somebody practicing a nature religion or religion that keeps them tied to nature, was a bad idea.
Right. Yeah. Well, a lot of the times I think that it just boils down to fear. Mm. You know, it's incredible when you think how powerful we really are. So, There's a book that I read, and it was called, it was something along the lines of The Perils and Opportunities of Awareness by Anthony DeMello. And I remember reading in there that he said something akin to, you can't make me mad. I choose to be mad. I have the ability to choose every emotion that I feel. And from there, you know, that really stuck with me. And I really sat with that and I was like, okay, how much of a choice do I really have? Because I was pretty young when I read that.
Sure.
You know, but it always stayed with me. So then from there, I had begun learning about how, you know, you can view something in one way, but if you choose to look at it in another way, your entire reality, your perception completely changes. And you can go from having a good day to a bad day. You know, for instance, let's say I'm traveling out to Texas and my plane is delayed. Well, I can sit there and be mad about it and be like, man, you know, this sucks that it's delayed. Or I can sit there and go, you know, maybe it's a blessing. Maybe I'm avoiding something in traffic once I'm there, you know? And so when we take responsibility for our emotions and we really look at how powerful we are, that we can produce these outcomes, you know, and I talk about it a lot in my book as well. I'm where I'm at right now because of the power of manifestation, but it's hard for people to kind of accept that, because then you also have to do a lot of shadow work. There's a lot of inner work that you have to do, a lot of facing yourself that you have to do, healing. And therefore, again, it wraps around back to fear. So when you have people that are used to these certain religious teachings and what have you, and then they're faced with something that's completely different, it's going to be scary. It's going to be hard. They're not going to want to change their perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And people are reticent to change. People are more than afraid of change, not only societally, but especially when it comes to religion and understanding, because while most villages, things like that, had a healer, that kind of thing, maybe a herbologist, something along those lines, not every village had a witch, so to speak. Those were typically folks that lived out amongst their own. And it wasn't for any religious practitioner reason, you know, like child sacrifice or anything like that. It was more the fact of, once again, energies and muddling of energy and trying to focus of energy, because when you are around certain energies, you tend to be influenced by them.
Yes.
And it can be really hard sometimes, especially if you are trying to tune into something specific, to tune into that when there is the distraction of everything around you.
Right. No, that can be really hard. I've experienced that as an empath. You can be a sponge, and then all of a sudden you're taking on so much, and you're also you can be easily confused on, wait a second, is this mine, or is it this place, or is it somebody else? And it can be hard to decipher that.
Sure, absolutely, and you know, especially like you said a minute ago, that true awareness of the situation and of the vibration and meaning of something, and what vibration you are giving it, being self-aware at that moment of, like you said, my plane's delayed. How much anger am I going to give to that?
Exactly.
Because the more anger I give it, the more anger will exist. Like, and I am choosing to give that energy to the situation.
Exactly.
Which is a self-fulfilling and self-manifesting thing at that point. So let's start getting into, I guess, some of the, because a lot of people don't really realize the practicing rules of Wicca, things like that. There are a few generalities that exist out there. Of course, there has been the whole kerfuffle as of late with Hocus Pocus 2 coming out. and I think that really explains a lot in a modern day context where our fear of witchcraft comes from. You know, the whole idea of child sacrifice, animal sacrifice, things like that. Not really the case in Wicca or in witchcraft as practiced by most folks.
Yeah, no. I've never come across sacrificing anything in all the stuff that I've looked at, the main thread that ties, I'm going to say, all of it together is your intention. Period. The stuff that you use is just tools. Like, when you get far enough along, so you may start out with cords, you know, strings and poppets and candles and what have you. These are tools that you can use to help focus your energy, but you really don't need them. You can literally sit there and really just put that intention, like in meditation. You can sit within meditation and really focus your mind, focus that energy to get the outcome that you want. So the sacrificing and the theatrics, I feel, is just, again, it's those that are fearful of change. They're fearful of truth. They're fearful of looking at themselves in a mirror.
Yeah.
And doing their inner work. So then they breed fear to try to keep people away from this stuff.
Well, and, you know, especially being raised Roman Catholic, having studied in the seminary and having studied world religion, I have to remind people all the time, feel free to revisit your Sunday Mass and take a look at the practices of high magic, as it's called, Kabbalistic magic.
Yes.
Things like that, where you are using incense, where you are invoking spirit, where there is very specific rote verse that you are supposed to follow with incantation. And believe me, if you look at that big red lectionary up at the front, folks, as a former altar server, I'm privy to all of the writings that are in there. And it says, incantation of the Holy Spirit. No different. Quite literally, that priest in persona Christi up on the altar is incanting, doing the exact same thing and using the conjoined energy of everybody in the room to accomplish a spiritual task. So, no different. It is pulled directly from Jewish ceremony. If you hop out to a synagogue, you'll see just about the echo. And it is really just about the echo of anything done in just about any high magic, whether it's Enochian magic or Kabbalah of the Golden Dawn, what have you.
Right. No. And that is something I remember going to. When I was growing up, one of the things that I would do is I would go to the different churches that my friends went to. And the whole reason behind it was because I grew up with my family being Christian, and I attended the Methodist church with my grandfather. Well, of course, it teaches us that we shouldn't judge, right? Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, the best way to not judge is to understand. So I took it upon myself to go to these different churches with my friends, but I wasn't just a one Sunday thing. I would submerse myself into it for like a 3-month period. And I would speak to the, you know, the pastor, and what have you. And because I really did want to see, like, what is it about this faith, this path that moves you?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at one point I was in healing group, and I had went to a Sunday service with a Catholic family, and they had pulled out a singing bowl, a Tibetan singing bowl. And the guy, he hit the side of it, you know, and the energy and the sound just vibrated. And then he, you know, did it around it. And I was just sitting there going, wait a second, what? Like, this is crazy. This is what I use in healing group too, but sure. But we do it for these reasons and that doesn't align with what I'm learning. And I asked the lady who I was with, I says, what is he using that for? Because we use it for this. And she scowled at me. I was told to be quiet.
Mm.
It was just to gather the congregation's attention.
Yeah.
And so I had unintentionally very much offended her that day.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting because after the seminary, I and quite a few seminarians who leave deal with a lot of things for many, many years.
I'm sure
a lot of mine was trying to understand the spiritual path of others and literally getting to the point of going, hey, man, everybody's got their own spiritual path. Just because you had an enlightening moment doesn't mean everybody does. Mm-hmm. And truly coming to that loving understanding that.
Right.
Not everybody had that experience. So you need to back down a little bit. Yours mm-hmm. was yours. Theirs is theirs, you know, and it's always interesting to me to be a fly on the wall when it comes to the discussion of religion and witchcraft or even just mm-hmm. the discussion of the occult to begin with, because there is such a misunderstanding of the term occult, which just means hidden. And the fact of this is not common knowledge. And right. when you really start looking at a congregation of people in that way, even the basics and the basis of what's going on in ceremony in front of them, most of them do not realize, and that is a cult to them.
Right, exactly.
The true meanings behind it, the meaning of the incense, everything else, all the physical things that are used to bring the congregation together, all done in very magical ways and for very magical reasons.
Mm-hmm. No, so. I agree with that. It's amazing to sit back and witness that, because that was something that as I was in healing group and as I learned more, but was also attending these different services. I witnessed that, you know, how they, I mean, the singing, that as well. I mean, it's vibration, it's the words, it's everything. And I all you could really do was smile and that's about it, because to really try to get into that conversation and really be like, you know, this actually does this, or, you know, like there's a deeper, you know, side to this, would be then kind of shaking up the very comfortable box that they have chosen to sit in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And even the origin of Halloween here in America, not that this time of year is not celebrated by numerous cultures the world over, but it is not called Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
There's All Hallows Eve. There's, of course, in the Wicca practicing folks, Samhain. Mm-hmm. There are numerous things. Even in Mexico, Dia de los Muertos, which is very much that is one of the main examples of how an indigenous belief was totally adopted by the Catholic Church to the point of it becoming All Saints Day, or All Souls Day, rather.
This is a beautiful time of year. I absolutely love it. To be able to honor the cycles of life and death and rebirth, and then to be able to, you know, I mean, I don't have a farm or anything, so there's no celebrating of the harvest or anything. But But I still try to, because, you know, when you get the seasonal foods from your grocery store and you have your corn and you have your pumpkins and you have all that kind of stuff, it's funny because you can literally feel it. There is a shift that happens, and it's usually kind of in the last 2 weeks of September. It's almost like you can feel this, I don't know, like a calling, a whisper, a faint smell on the wind, you know, perfume. And then all of a sudden we're sliding into this time. And I mean, to be able to come together with people and then also to celebrate your loved ones who are no longer here, that really hit me back in 2011 when my grandfather had passed away. Mm. You know, I had experienced death, you know, from having acquaintances or, you know, people in the family, like friends of family and stuff like that. But when it was my grandfather, you know, because I was raised by my grandparents and my dad, it was life changing completely. And I also became a lot more open to different practices about honoring the dead and having an ancestor altar and how important it is to carry their memory and to share that. And then to, you know, one of the practices is setting a place at the table for them. So as you're eating and you're, you know, enjoying this beautiful feast, you have that place set at the table, you know, for them, to honor them and their memory.
Yeah, precisely. We, and it's interesting because right as the spiritualism movement, things like that began in Europe and America, was this switch of the identity of death. And how we treated death, and really wildly right at the same time as when the whole funerary market started, you know, and we lost the idea of awake. Mm-hmm. You started having funeral parlors instead of the parlor in your house being used for that. We stopped having funerals at home. The whole concept of grieving changed. While there are, and I've got it up on screen right now, the tribe in India that literally lives with their dead.
Oh, wow.
You know, and common practice across the world. There are numerous Asiatic countries, things like that, where every year they bring the mummified remains of their family home and they spend a week with them, things like that. And it's a different idea. Like you're saying, there is a different concept of what happens than what we have. And it's interesting to see how that movement has changed over time, how we've even got to the point of, a lot of people trying to get back to the point of home burial, that kind of stuff. And knowing that cross-culturally, there is a belief that this time of year, that veil becomes thinner.
Yes, is, I believe it does.
Well, let's explore that a little bit. In what ways do you see evidence for that?
Well, you know, it goes back to just my experiences in my personal life. I, you know, will... Gosh, it's so funny because when you live this way, and to try to really break it down to a couple examples, it can kind of be hard. But, you know, I'll be sitting there around this time of year and I'll think about something that it is that I would really like to have happen, or something that I might want. You know, for example, here's one. I had been thinking about how I had really wanted to, well, I was regretting getting rid of all my old Nancy Drew books. And I was just like, man, it'd be so amazing to have them again. And I was just, you know, really focusing on that. And wouldn't you know it, a day later, I had a neighbor knock on my door and they said, hey, we're moving. Would you like these? And they hand me a box. I open the box and it is literally filled with old Nancy Drew books.
Awesome.
It was incredible. And, you know, so it seems like the ability to manifest is stronger. And then when it comes to getting responses, when you are talking to your loved ones, there may be, you know, maybe a certain bird shows up that, you know, was your loved one's favorite, and now it's kind of hanging around, and it's like, oh, okay. And you can feel that communication. You know, it was funny because right before I was getting ready to do this, there was a couple knocks in my room, but it was like on the wall, which is weird because it was like, okay, is there somebody in my house or what is this? And I went and I looked around the whole house and it's just me, but it was so very clear that it was a couple knocks. And so I just kind of laughed and said, okay, all right, well, it's Halloween and the veil is at its thinnest, and somebody, I guess, is wanting to come through and say hi. I acknowledged it and just kind of, you know, went on with my day.
It may have also, because like I told you, your book literally arrived on my doorstep moments before I called you. I was waiting for the knock on my door.
Oh my gosh.
So there, like,
wow,
I may have very well manifested that knock in your house.
You know what? You're right. That's incredible. And,
I think that kind of brings up a really big point, because especially whenever you're talking witchcraft, heck man, let's talk about it in the form of prayer. Real quick,
yes.
for all of you out there who may not be open-minded enough to consider casting a spell, manifestation, what have you, any of these buzzwords that we've used tonight, let's just talk about it in the power of prayer. The real question is, are you looking for a specific answer to your prayer, or are you open-minded enough to see the answer to your prayer in something that you may not consider?
Beautifully put.
Because that's really what you have to do with manifestation, prayer, any of it. Like, if you are giving it an exact, I challenge you to tell the universe, capital U, God, Jesus, what have you. Like, and I used to tell this to the classes that I taught. Feel free to, hey, God, please help me. I need to pass my geometry test tomorrow. Like, I'm shafted if I don't. I won't graduate. I need to pass. You kind of got to do your work and study your geometry, guy. Like the odds of you casting a spell to miraculously pass geometry are next to nil.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, it's true. I don't care what space credits you got built in. This is coming from a dude that did it. All right. And like, I served at the altar and I worked at my church and I did all kinds of things, hon. So I had a lot of space credits built up. Didn't help me pass geometry. I needed to study my geometry. Like, you've got to put your work into it as well. And that also means that you've got to put your work into looking for the result. You can't be so lazy as just to expect your result to be like verbatim what you're looking for. It doesn't really work that way, does it?
No, you are right on. And that is one of the big things that I've talked about, too, is that, you know, it's not, you can't just ask. You can't just say, you know, hey, universe, hey, whatever. Because, I mean, yes, the universe is conspiring to gift you all these amazing gifts. The gifts are already coming to you.
Yep.
But guess what? You have to do the work.
Yeah.
You have to. There's no way around that.
And it's also not going to give you what you don't need.
Exactly.
It's not going to, like, make you rich. You know, like, that's truly the whole Aladdin's genie situation. Careful asking for a ton of gold. It may just fall out of the sky on top of you.
Right.
You know? So it is a be careful what you ask for, and be careful how you ask for it and the intention with which you ask. Because even like you said earlier, with doing the knot work when you were younger and the immediate scare away that you had. Not many people mm-hmm. are aware of that whole threefold principle in
right.
Magical practice, things like that, where whatever energy you put forth will return to you threefold. So if you're mm-hmm. casting a spell with evil intent, prime example, numerous times over the last many years, and occasionally political things happen, stuff like that. But the one thing that I kept mentioning was, why is this coven of witches trying to cast a spell to harm Donald Trump? Like, you cast a spell to make sure he didn't get elected. How'd that work out?
Right.
Like, he got elected. Careful what you put out there, because it may just boomerang back three times over, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And when you're talking about, like, let's get together and cast a spell to cause somebody harm or to cause ill will, mm-hmm. not truly the path of Wicca, not really any true Wiccan practice in any way, shape, or form. Not that there isn't black art out there, not that, and even the misnomer of the fact that, like, Satanism practices like that. No, it doesn't.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have a couple examples too.
Please.
You really have to be careful of what you ask for, because I remember I wanted to manifest, and I remember saying this, that I wanted to have a healing house. I wanted to be able to move from where I had been currently living, and I wanted to move into a much nicer place, a place that reminded me of home, a place that I could practice my healing. And that's all I focused on, was the outcome, the place. Mm. Well, we ended up, at that point, we ended up with a notice that they were not going to re-sign our lease. And we were not ready to up and move at that point. But it was one of those things where it's like, all right, you want to move?
Yeah,
boom.
Yeah.
Here,
no,
it's happening now.
Yeah. Yep. Well, now you got no choice. Get it moving.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And I remember, too, when I was there was this program. It was called the Mind Detox. And then it morphed into what was known as the Shakti Challenge. And it was literally about learning how to rewire the brain, because that's possible. You know, when we sure. have habits, right, there's the spark between, well, it makes a bridge. And you have to, you know, practice something else, a different response, a different whatever, to, you know, create a new bridge. To really be able to let go of those old habits. But as we were going through it, I remember in the very beginning, there was kind of this warning, and it said, you do understand that as you go through this practice, the universe is going to align you with your highest and best purpose. So what that is going to mean is that the things that no longer serve your highest and best purpose are going to fall out of your life. And it wasn't long after I began this, I got a divorce. And wow. there was a lot of things that changed. I got a divorce. I moved. My life completely changed. And, you know, there again, it goes back to it being really important that you do the work. This stuff is powerful. It's life altering. So you really have to pay attention to what it is that you're manifesting. But don't just look at it as, okay, what can I gain?
Yeah.
Look at it as well as what are the, like, what will I lose if I don't do it?
Yeah, absolutely. And truly, learning to pose the question as a journey, you know, help guide me to the path that will lead me to this.
Oh,
because at that point, you're leaving the universe room to flex, man, and you're leaving your mind open, you know, as opposed to having a rigid thought of give me this. And even if you think of it as give me this, feel free to have somebody come up and tell you that. See how well you react. The universe is kind of the same way. It'd be like,
yeah.
It'll be like, well, all right, you prick, if that's what you want, there you go. You know, like, oh, you want it? All right. There you go. And yeah, yeah. It can be rough lessons sometimes. And how did you, because I mean, obviously these are emotional lessons for you. These are huge life lessons that even to your own admission, you were not quite ready for.
Right.
How have you reconciled that since? How have you seen that working in your life since?
Oh, goodness. Well, you know, okay. So we're going to take my divorce as the starting point here.
Okay.
And it was incredible because it was like, okay, it's right in front of me. And at this point, I had no idea what I was going to do because I had been a stay-at-home mom, wife, and it was a tough marriage. There was a lot of mental, emotional abuse and stuff. And so I didn't have a car. I didn't have job history. I didn't have a dime to my name. And I was just like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. And I decided to release it to the universe. And I laughed and said, universe juice, right?
Right.
Here we go. Here we go. I'm just going to trust. I'm going to continue to work on me and manifesting and really trying to align my life with the things that are for my highest and best purpose and to focus on healing myself and others. And all of a sudden, the next thing I know, I end up, I was volunteering at a dental office and the assistant, she ended up quitting for some reason. And then all of a sudden they look at me and they go, all right, you're up. And I'm like, I'm up for what? And I received on the job, training as an assistant.
Wow.
And yeah. And that was incredible. And then all of a sudden, because I was working with my best friend, I was like, man, I wish that I could move back to our hometown. And it'd be so cool to be able to carpool and have our kids in the same sitters. And I was like, well, universe juice, let's pull up Craigslist. And sure enough, on Craigslist, the very first unit for rent was literally one house down from her.
Wow.
And in our hometown. And I was like, all right. So I call them and it was mine in less than 24 hours. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. And then I, from there, you know, I just kept believing in myself and in the universe and the energy because it was, you know, showing me that this stuff is really, it's true. And yeah. So boom, I end up launching KPNL, and which that took off and that was incredible. And from there, you know, there were things that I never thought that I would do. I didn't think that I would travel. I didn't think that I would own my own businesses. I didn't think that I would ever really write a book. And here it is, 4 short years later, okay? And I have flown, I've been to Ohio several times, Texas several times, Tennessee, and out to Ireland. I left the States and I was in Ireland. And I mean, gosh, and then I published my book in February of this year. And now I'm already, you know, started on my second one. And so it's just... it's incredible. And it keeps showing itself every day. So that's my big thing that I want anybody that's listening. I don't believe in impossible anymore.
Yeah.
Because if you really want something bad enough and it's a positive thing, it's something that does align with your highest and best purpose, do the work and it's already yours.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And that is my, I cannot express the number of times that we have mentioned that on this show with guests. and even before we had guests in our previous incarnation, where it was like, you have to understand that you can't ask for something that will cause harm to you or others. You can't ask for something that, you know, maybe you're just not supposed to have, and you got to be okay with not having it.
Yeah.
You know? And you really do have to learn that point of humility where it's the fact of, like you said, does this align with my higher self and what I should be doing? Because as long as it does, there's no reason, as long as you put the work in, that the universe will not grant it.
Exactly.
And tell us a little bit real quick, before we let you go, about the Caravan of Lore. Because it's interesting. I have been going through the website, things like that.
Aww.
Tell us a little bit about why you started the Caravan, what it's all about.
Yeah. So the Caravan was the very first thing that I ever ended up doing. So let's see, we're going to go all the way back when, so my children were younger and I was homeschooling. And we had this unit where we were talking about the development of electricity and entertainment. Now, I grew up with my grandparents and my dad, like I said, and they were really into antiques. So we have like the oil lamps, and yes, I'm only 35, but I did grow up on Howdy Doody and Rin Tin Tin, you know, those nice. Those old TV or the radio shows. And then of course, you know, like I Love Lucy and stuff on TV. I love that stuff. But so when I was talking about the old radio shows, I ended up getting out my laptop and I was like, huh, I wonder if there's anything like that that exists today. Well, that's how I ended up finding about podcasts. So from there, I ended up finding a podcast that really encompassed all things paranormal. And I was just shocked because I was like, oh, man. So I kind of read through the description and I was like, wow, there's other people out there that have had these experiences that are similar to mine. One of them that really stood out was talking about shadow people, because I was like, wow, so I'm really not alone. This is something that people have experienced throughout the world. Well, eventually I ended up as a guest on that show and I told my story. And afterwards, I remember getting messages from people again all over the world. One was from New Zealand, one was from somewhere on the East Coast, someone, you know, in the South. And they were just like, you know, thank you so much for sharing your stories. This was incredible. I've had this experience too. From having these experiences, I was like, this is another form of healing, you know? And from being in healing group from 15 till into my 20s, you know, I knew that I was a healer and I knew that that was one of my jobs here, you know, while I'm doing this incarnation. And I was like, this is how to do it. This is how I want to do it. And so I ended up creating the podcast with a co-host at the time. And we brought people on, you know, we would research topics and we'd share the topics. And then we'd also bring people on to tell their stories. And it was just this incredible journey. And and from there, you know, KPNL was born, because not only did I want to cater to the experiencers, but I really wanted to elevate those in our community that are doing what I'm doing and be like, you know, you're giving these people a stage. You're having an active hand in this healing. And so I wanted to bring everybody together in one place and really let them, you know, the difference with my network is that I want it to be a canvas for everybody that is there. I don't want to constrain you with time limits or exclusivity or anything like that. I want them to really be able to flourish there, because the main goal in everything that I'm doing, whether it's the Caravan, whether it's KPNL, whether it's any book that I publish, it's healing. That's my goal.
That is such a beautiful message. I want to thank you so much for your time tonight talking about this topic. Once again, I love Halloween, but I always kind of cringe with the misunderstandings that people have of just
indeed
the occult and Wicca and witchcraft and its history to begin with. So thank you as a practitioner for coming in and talking about that. I'd love to have you on again and again talking about this topic and so much more.
I would love that. I'd be honored. This was truly incredible. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime. Before we let you go, let everybody know where they can go to catch up with the Caravan of Lore, where they can go to follow you, where they can go to follow KPNL Radio. If I'm not mistaken, you have an app coming out soon. Is that right?
I do. So we had an app on Android for KPNL, but the hosting company that I use, they redid it, so I have to relaunch it. So I'm in the process of relaunching a new Android app for KPNL.
Great.
So where to find it all? If you go to Google and you type in KPNL Radio, it should be the very first thing that pops up. Also, you know, it's kpnl-db.com. Same thing with the Caravan. You can type in the Caravan of Lore or the Caravan Library of Lore on Google. It'll be the first thing that pops up. Social media, again, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, it's all Caravan of Lore or KPNL Radio. And then if you would like to speak with me personally, I am under Anne Celine on Facebook. Some people like email more. So that would be kpnlradio@gmail.com.
Fantastic. And where can they go for readings? Can they contact you just on Facebook, things like that for readings? And
Yeah. Definitely. They can message me on Facebook. They could email me, whether it's through KPNL or the Caravan, any of that. Totally.
Great. Well, thank you so much again, Anne. Please do hold the line while we close things out. While you are online checking out everything from the amazing Anne Celine, as well as Caravan of Lore and KPNL Radio, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm, folks. CuriousRealm.com is the website. That is where you can find all the episodes. That's where you can follow us on social media. There's all the platforms over there on the right. We also have our new experiencer page. Stop on by CuriousRealm.com/story. And you can share your story of the paranormal, the extreme. If you're a targeted individual, we have an anonymous form there. You can share your evidence, your pictures, videos, audio, everything else. We'd love to hear from you so we can pose these questions and experiences to our professionals whenever they come on. So until next time, everybody, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.